The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
America, bonjour. Hi, Kennedy Hu here at Inside the California Studios of the Hu Hewitt Show. If you were expecting an eye patch this morning, you're disappointed if you're watching on YouTube or Rumble. I got to the good doctor's surgery yesterday and was told that the nurse who had told me it was my eyelid biopsy that needed to be sliced and diced, I found out it's my eyebrow biopsy. So you can't even see it on this thing, which is great. So I'm fine and a little bit. The other couple of slices and dice. It's my dermatological weight loss program. Every 4 months, I have them cut off a quarter pound or so, and I lose weight over the years. Don't be an Irish Catholic lifeguard in the 70s. That's my advice to everyone. That was before sunscreen and zinc oxide only worked on the nose. So I'm back. I'm fine. We had a great time at the Nixon Library last night with Brett Baer, author of To Rescue a Republican, of course, Fox News anchor. I looked out at the sea of, I think we had close to 500 people there, and I said, oh my gosh, Brett's going to be here all night signing books. So I kept it to a crisp 45 minutes of interview and questions, and he's magnificent. It's a magnificent book. Enjoyed talking with him. But a little bit of sleep, but I want to begin by wishing my friend Dennis Prager well. I did not know until I got home last night that Dennis had announced on his radio show, because I had been over at the dermatologist and then taken a little bit of a rest before going late with Brett, that he has COVID. I did tell you yesterday my daughter and three grandkids have COVID. My daughter's a breakout case, and my grandkids are fine. They have colds and sniffles and sore throats and that sort of thing. As with most children, blessedly, they are unaffected. Dennis is doing well, according to my friend Tom Tradup, who checked in with him yesterday afternoon, just tired. He made his announcement on his show yesterday. It's been mischaracterized in a lot of places, so I just want to play it for you. Cut number 20, Dennis Prager on his radio show yesterday.
Okay, everybody. All good. I'm broadcasting from my home because I'm not going into the station as I have COVID. I was tested positive last week, and I have been steadily improving. At no point was I in danger of hospitalization. I have received monoclonal antibodies. That's Regeneron. I have, of course, for years, a year and a half, not years, been taking hydroxychloroquine from the beginning with zinc. I've taken Z-Pak, the erythromycin, as the Zelenko protocol would have it. I have taken ivermectin. I have done what a person should do if one is not going to get vaccinated. It is infinitely preferable to have natural immunity than vaccine immunity. And that is what I hoped for the entire time. Hence, I so engaged with strangers, constantly hugging them, taking photos with them, knowing that I was making myself very susceptible to getting COVID, which is indeed, as bizarre as it sounded, what I wanted, in the hope that I would achieve natural immunity and be taken care of by therapeutics. That is exactly what has happened. It should have happened to the great majority of Americans. The number of deaths in this country owing to COVID is a scandal, which one day will be clear to Americans. The opposition to therapeutics on the part of the CDC is owing to the corruption of the belief in the value of vaccine and only vaccine. Whether it is because of all the money that goes into the CDC from the pharmaceutical companies, or a simple, unquestioning faith in vaccines or both. Only God knows.
I am very, very happy that Dennis feels better. He was out hula hooping yesterday afternoon. Got a video of that from Susan. He's surrounded by empty Cheeto bags, so I know his appetite is fine. And Dennis is an old and dear friend of 30 years. You know somebody's a friend when you're invited to their roast. So I got to roast Dennis. I look forward to the next time we do that. We do that every 10 years for Dennis, whether he wants us to or not. But he's doing wonderfully well, and that is good news. His statement has been mischaracterized everywhere, and so I let you hear it for yourself. Dennis and I had a disagreement about this. We've talked about it often. I'm double vaccinated with a booster. I urge everyone to get a vaccine. Not because Colin Powell is a case study in the danger of breakout infections or the danger of the disease. As the Washington Post reports this morning, Colin Powell has been treated for a cancer that severely impairs the immune system, lowering the coronavirus vaccine effectiveness. Because of my daughter's experience, she has a head cold and coughs a little bit, but she's able to take care of her family while her husband is away on military duty. And she is, as you know, as all moms do, pushing on with a mild COVID case, not a severe COVID case. I believe in the efficacy of the vaccine and the booster. Dennis believes in the efficacy of therapeutics. I believe mine is the better argument. But Dennis, God provide that he be fine, and he is acting like he's going to be fine. And our argument will continue on forever about whether vaccines are preferable to waiting upon the therapeutics and then getting natural immunity. But he's been very responsible in being alert to and ready to respond and going into quarantine as soon as he develops symptoms. I want people to understand that. I was with Dennis probably 2 weeks ago, and he was being very, very responsible. Dennis is a great, great American. In fact, the one thing he'd want you to do is contribute to my Alliance Defending Freedom banner at the top of HughHewitt.com. Not really. It would be a wonderful thing as a show of support. All of you went to DennisPrager.com and contributed to his Alliance Defending Freedom banner today, as opposed to mine. Because Dennis and I are always a little bit competitive about these things. We always think our audiences are preferable to each other. Now, I have more affiliates, but at certain times of the day, he has more listeners because my signal is compromised in the morning in some areas, and his signal is not. And we both beat Gallagher completely into the ground on almost everything. But Dennis and I have been going at this for 30 years, and there's just a lot of funny Hugh and Dennis stories. But I am glad that he is feeling better. He is fatigued, and he is recovering. Do listen to his show today. Call him up. Give him a thumbs up. But he won't dare say. And if you support me and you support what I've been working on for all these years, truth, candor, clarity before agreement. I gave him that, by the way. He should pay me a royalty on that clarity before agreement. Go over to DennisPrager.com and contribute to one of his favorite causes, Alliance Defending Freedom. As I said, Colin Powell in the Washington Post revealed when I announced it yesterday on the show, I was unaware that he had been immunocompromised. And that's a key part of the story, not the whole story, but part of the story. The other rundown, very, very quickly in the 3 minutes before, stripped naked, beaten, forced to shout Viva Fidel inside Cuba's crackdown on dissent. It's been 100 days since Cubans marched for their freedom, and the tales of repression and torture inside of Cuba's smaller but no less lethal gulag are in the Washington Post today. Please keep them in your prayers. China's magnesium shortage threatens global car industry. Wonderful. Japan Economic Security Minister warns on chip industry survival in that country, according to the Financial Times, as was the last story on the magnesium. Japan is aware that China is moving to take control completely of computer chips, and therefore they've got to step up. Brussels, because bureaucrats got a bureaucrat, are vowing to punish Poland for challenging the supremacy of European Union law. In an effort to again persuade no one to take it seriously, the bureaucrats of Brussels are doing whatever they can to drive yet another member state out as they drove out Britain. The FDA is nearing approval for mixing and matching COVID-19 booster shots, which is, they're dangerously close to common sense at this point. In an article in the Wall Street Journal this morning, Felisa Schwartz reports, it doesn't really matter. Take Moderna or Pfizer. That's what the FDA is going to say, something I probably would have said like 6 months ago. But then again, the FDA moves on bureaucrat time. Very nice story on the First Lady this morning. Jill Biden paid a surprise visit to the woman who helped her regain faith in God. I've tweeted that out. I'd like you to read it. North Korea, however, fired the first ballistic missile of recent memory off its East Coast Tuesday. It's its fifth weapons test in recent weeks, the first ballistic missile test. And thank you, President Biden, for not maintaining the deterrence that somehow Donald Trump had established. Texas passed a sports ban for transgender students, the fifth such state to do so. Starbucks workers are seeking a union. Zillow is not buying any more homes. Ahmaud Arbery's murder trial begins in Atlanta. Donald Trump is preventing records from being released. Good for him. Executive privilege matters. And in Great Britain, the Amos killing, the terror suspect, it's an Islamist fanatic, had made a false appointment with the member of parliament before he killed him. And we are on the brink of a massive civil war in Lebanon. I will tell you more about that when I come back, America. Go nowhere. You're listening to the Tuesday edition of the Hugh Hewitt Show. Brought to you by ReliefFactor.com. $19.95 gets you started on ReliefFactor.com. I talk about it three times in my daily show. At the bottom of the first hour when I take it, and then in hours two and three when I remind you to take it, depending on when your commute begins, because ReliefFactor.com works. It's the only supplement I've taken in 30 years of broadcasting. I've declined every other opportunity to take a supplement, and I'll tell you why. Because ReliefFactor.com actually works. Icarian Curcumin and Resveratrol Omega, temporary relief for the relief of minor aches and pains, temporary support for the relief of minor aches and pains, and you can't do better than that three-week starter pack, $19.95. Welcome back, America. It's Hugh Hewitt. You've been a regular guest on the Hugh Hewitt Show for a long time when you have your own music. David M. Drucker, as he is known on Twitter with the Washington Examiner, has his own music, which is, of course, from the Sinister series on Washington, D.C., because David M. Drucker knows everything about Washington, D.C. It is also pub date for David M. Drucker. In Trump's Shadow drops today. In Trump's Shadow is David's new book on the 2024 race to be the next president of the United States. In Trump's Shadow is in bookstores everywhere. In Trump's Shadow is available at Amazon.com. And I'm following the Luntz rule, In Trump's Shadow, and saying it seven times. And if you see me on the airplane today from LAX to D.C., I will be reading In Trump's Shadow because I got mine already, unlike you folks. David, good morning on Pub Day. How is In Trump's Shadow doing?
In Trump's Shadow is doing pretty good, Hugh. I'm excited. You know, as you know, but for me, it's a first-time thing. When you write a book, you know, it's not, I'm not curing cancer, and it's not as hard as being a parent. But when it comes to writing and reporting and analyzing, it's one of the hardest things you can do if you do what I do for a living. And so it's thrilling that it's finally out there. I hope people read it. What I tried to do, and you and I have talked about this, there are plenty of books about what happened during the Trump years, and I think they're great. I'm trying to talk about the impact he has had on the Republican Party and what it means for 2024, really what it means for the future of the party and the country, even beyond 2024, because I really believe that after reporting the book, the Trump presidency, whether or not Trump ever runs again, even if, and this is not happening, obviously, but even if Republicans have decided to throw Trump himself overboard, his impact from an agenda and policy perspective was generational. And I think what you're going to see in 24 are most Republicans running for president in one way or another telling Republican voters that they are going to continue Trump's legacy and, in a sense, be the next Trump, but maybe without quite being the next Trump.
Yeah, David Drucker, I am going to moderate a debate of would-be senators in Ohio on Sunday night, the six Republicans who are running for United States Senate to replace Rob Portman. And I'm reading In Trump's Shadow to prepare for that debate. They might want to get a hold of a copy themselves if they want to know what I'm thinking about. I think you're going to sell like hotcakes. I cannot wait to read this. But I wanted to ask you, I know that two of the profiles in the book are of Robert O'Brien and Mike Pompeo. I was with both of those men last week. I'm curious what your assessment of both of their intentions and odds are should President Trump not enter the race, and if he should.
Well, it's very interesting. Let me start with Mike Pompeo, the former Secretary of State, because I spent so much time researching him and reporting on him. He wants to run for president. And in fact, in a podcast interview a couple of weeks ago, and it's a companion to my book, so it's also aptly titled In Trump's Shadow, I asked Secretary Pompeo I know you're not going to tell me if you're running or not today. I'm not that crazy. But I said, if Trump decides to run a third time, does that automatically mean you will not? And he would not say, as some have said, that automatically means he would not. He said, look, if you're going to run for president, you need to believe that you have something unique and critical to offer the country at a time in history. he is planning to run, and everything he is doing is about planning to run. Robert O'Brien, who I profiled less but did mention, is a very interesting figure because he comes from the traditional wing of the party, but he fit in very well with Trump in the White House and was his most successful national security advisor from the perspective of doing the job and not getting crosswise with the commander-in-chief. Could be a very interesting dark horse candidate as a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. He's a Mormon. He comes from the West. There are pockets of Mormon voters in Arizona, Nevada, Idaho, other states where in a multi-candidate primary, he might be able to do some damage. He's also interested in running. I classify him as less interested in Pompeo.
I will tell you, I just played Ron and Casey DeSantis at an appearance yesterday where Casey DeSantis discussed her fight against breast cancer. I have not yet read In Trump's Shadow. It's the airplane book for today. I assume there's a lot on Governor DeSantis.
There is not a lot, but there is a reason. It wasn't purposeful. When I started out reporting In Trump's Shadow, what struck me and what initiated the book was that there were a group of Republicans planning for 2024 since almost the day Trump took office in 2017. Usually you wait for the reelect. The incumbent wins, the incumbent loses of your party, and then everybody's free to do whatever they want for themselves. Well, a lot of people started planning for 2024 very early. Ron DeSantis was not one of those people. In fact, his rise is really precipitated by his winning the election for governor in Florida in 2018, long after some of the candidates I was profiling had started working on their 2024 presidential campaign. And so I mentioned DeSantis early in the book, but for the reason I have laid out, he didn't fit the initial parameters for reporting. And in fact, by the time he was really rising as a major contender, I was getting toward a filing date for the book that had already been extended. And there was just no way to include him in a proper way.
Well, this is not our book interview. We will do that. The classic two-segment podcast, two segments on the radio podcast interview, if not this week, next with David M. Drucker. As I prepare for the Republican senatorial debate in Ohio, there's no better book to do so with than In Trump's Shadow. You'll see me reading it on the plane today if I see you in the airport. David M. Drucker on Twitter. Go over to Amazon, get the book that's going to make every political reporter read it, In Trump's Shadow. He, of course, sat down with former President Trump. We'll tell you about that when we do our book interview. Thank you, David. I'll be back. Hour number three of the Hugh Hewitt Show. Straight ahead. I want to remind you that our sponsor is AndrewandTodd.com. There with Sierra Pacific, they lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home, or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to AndrewandTodd.com or call them at 888-888-1172. Morning, Glory America. Bonjour. Hi, Canada. Hugh Hewitt. Not in the Beltway today. I'm in California, so it's early. I'm flying back to the Beltway later today, having spent last evening with Brett Baer talking about his new book, To Rescue the Republic. I'm joined now by another Beltway denizen. Michael Scheer is White House correspondent for The New York Times. Good morning, Michael. How are you?
Doing very well. Thank you, Hugh.
Last night, Brett received a couple of questions about the president's health, which, of course, he did not respond to because it would be speculative. But he did point to an exchange between Jen Psaki and Brian Karim from Friday, which I want to play for you. Perhaps you were there. Cut number 16.
He will.
How soon?
Don't have an update for you, but will soon. I promise you, Kelly asks about this all the time. Yeah. She's keeping us on our toes.
So she throws Kelly O'Donnell under the bus for asking about the president's health daily, and Brian Karim gets, don't worry, we'll get back to you. What do you know about this? I actually wasn't even aware that the president hadn't done the annual health release thing.
Yeah, what I know about it is just what I've, you know, experienced in the briefing room for the past, you know, being there on and off for the past 7 or 8 months, which is that, you know, we in the press corps have continued to ask, when is it going to happen? And Psaki has continued to say repeatedly, it will happen. He is going to have, the sort of regular presidential checkup that all presidents have. And it hasn't happened yet. And, you know, what to sort of make of it is sort of unclear. I mean, I think, you know, one of the things that I believe as a reporter and as a reporter who's covered the White House for almost, 11 plus years, is that I think it's important for presidents, all presidents, to be transparent about their health, about what, what is going right and wrong with their health, because frankly, they're the ultimate servant to the American people. And the American people deserve to know if there are issues, what those issues are and what the president is doing to, to take care of them. And so as a reporter, I think Kelly O'Donnell is doing exactly what she should be doing, which is to regularly ask. Others of us have done the same, and I think we'll keep doing it.
So what is the standard practice? You've been covering the White House for a long time, and I know that there's an occasional health story. There's sometimes a huge story, as when President Trump got COVID and had to go to Walter Reed, or when I was in the White House counsel's office when President Reagan had colon surgery. That's a, that's right. A big story that no one can miss. What's the standard operating procedure for a president?
Well, so you're right. There are the acute events that we cover, and presidents are I mean, I think I don't know if there are any that have ever hidden those kinds of acute events because they're pretty obvious. The standard is an annual checkup that, a president has once a year in which they go to Walter Reed Medical Center, which is, run by the military and is the sort of hospital where presidents get checked up. They go to, get a full physical with all of, all of the tests and, evaluations, what their cholesterol level is, what their, how their heart is operating or whatever. And typically will at some point after that release a letter from the president's doctor describing the medications that they take, describing, any issues, whether they, whether they're overweight, whether they're, diabetic, what have, whatever issues there are, they, and we all saw some of the, more comical, releases of that kind during the Trump years when, the doctor was saying he's the best health person in health for, could live to be 200 years old or what have you. I mean, there were some oddities, but even Donald Trump in those years, provided that. Now, to be fair, Biden hasn't been in an office a full year yet. So, I mean, I don't know that you can sort of say he's hiding it. It's just it hadn't happened yet.
I just don't know when the standard practice is. Apparently, there isn't a standard practice.
I don't remember. I don't remember thinking, oh, it happens every, mid-March or something. I mean, I think that's a very personal thing. We all sort of have our physicals scheduled at different times. And so, I think I don't remember there being a specific, time of the year that it always.
Yeah. I always do it on my birthday. It's always in February. And so I wonder if he has, okay, that's what I was curious about that. Now I want to go to a Jen Psaki Whopper yesterday. And were you in the press room yesterday?
Yes.
Okay.
I was.
Let me play. I want, do you know what I'm going to guess?
I don't know. I think,
okay, it is cut number 17.
Can you comment on reports that China tested a nuclear-capable hypersonic missile over the summer to the surprise of U.S. officials? Are these accurate, and do these raise concerns about China's nuclear capabilities?
Well, I know General Secretary Austin, I should say, was asked this question this morning and addressed it, but I'm not going to comment on the specific report. I can say and would echo what he said, which is generally speaking, we've made clear our concern about the military capabilities that the PRC continues to pursue. And we have been consistent in our approach with China. We welcome stiff competition, but do not want that competition to veer into conflict. And that is certainly what we convey privately as well.
We welcome stiff competition caught the eye of every person who follows nuclear weapons and especially hypersonics, Michael Scheer. Did that sound like a clunker off of your ear when you heard it?
Yeah, it did. I mean, welcoming stiff competition is what you normally think of in terms of perhaps, development of consumer technology or something that you know, that doesn't have national security implications. It's hard to imagine the administration truly welcoming stiff competition when it comes to, you know, development of nuclear weapons or advanced, you know, advanced deployment systems of nuclear warheads. I mean, it's so, yeah, that seemed to me to be an odd way of phrasing that, for sure.
So does the press corps generally get, in your opinion, Michael, the significance of the orbiting of a hypersonic off of a Long March rocket? It is a game changer at the Sputnik moment. Does the White House press corps get that?
You know, I mean, it depends on what you mean by the White House press corps. There are certainly people in the White House press corps, and I don't actually necessarily consider myself one of them, who are, you know, who are more expert, more, you know, closely follow the kind of national security implications of this kind of, you know, development and really follow the kind of daily and, you know, developments of that part of the world. You know, the White House press corps were a bunch of generalists, right? Some of us know more, in my case, for example, about immigration, right? I wrote a book about immigration. Other people might know, you know, more about congressional legislation or gun policy or whatever. And so I think that sometimes when these kinds of things come up in the briefings, I think we all try to keep abreast of what's going on in the world, but we're not going to catch at that moment everything. I think what you hope is, you know, I work at a news organization, for example, that has a broad range of people who have really dive deep into all different subjects. And so, you know, you hope that by the end of the day, the people who, you know, who might kind of understand more deeply the significance of that kind of thing have sort of noticed it, and that, you know, the paper as a whole, the organization as a whole, doesn't miss the significance.
Now, when Sputnik went up, no American was unaware by the end of that day that there's a little spherical satellite. So a hypersonic, which travels at five times the speed of sound, being launched and orbiting the Earth and coming within a couple of dozen miles of its intended, means we've been lapped. Not only lapped, we've been lapped a couple of times on a critical technology. And it ought to start a scramble. It ought to evoke something from the White House other than General Secretary Austin said this, and we welcome a stiff competition. Will she be back? We got a minute left, Michael. Do you think that this will have... we had the Colin Powell passing yesterday. Maybe she was just not on her game. But will it be a matter of, or do you expect it to be a matter of focus this morning?
Maybe. I mean, you know, sometimes it takes a little time for this kind of thing to sink in, as you say, both at the White House, but also among reporters. You know, sometimes we, you know, it takes a little bit of, you know, understanding of what something really means before we kind of get it. So maybe it'll come back today and play a more prominent role.
Michael Scheer, I hope so. I'll have Senator Cotton on at the bottom of the hour to talk with him about it on the House. Maybe the Democrats would actually add some Columbia class spending into the $1.5 trillion minimum that they're about to blow with none on defense. We'll see. Michael Scheer, The New York Times, always a pleasure. Follow him on Twitter at Scheer M on Twitter. I'll be right back, America, on The Hugh Hewitt Show. Thank you, Mike. Hi, it's Hugh Hewitt for Birch Gold. If you found yourself completely befuddled by events in Afghanistan, alarmed about inflation and otherwise uneasy, well, about everything, about Americans standing in the world, about what comes next, then you're feeling like everybody else is, and uncertainty is usually a time that you want to increase your holdings in gold. When I do that, I do it with Birch Gold. I buy my gold from Birch Gold. You can go to HughGold.com or text my name, Hugh, H-U-G-H, to 474747. They will send you free information. If you want to roll over a portion of your IRA or your 401k into physical precious metals, Birch Gold is who to do that with. They have an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau, countless five-star reviews, thousands of happy customers. If you're thinking, I got to get some gold, do it with Birch Gold via HughGold.com or text my name, Hugh, to 474747. That's Hugh to 474747 or HughGold.com.
Well,
Welcome back, America. If you, like the rest of us, read Dmitry Sevastopoulos' article in the Financial Times on Saturday on the launch by China of a hypersonic missile that orbited the globe, taken into space by a Long March missile, you'll be very interested in what Senator Tom Cotton, who joins us now, has to say about that. Good morning, Senator Cotton.
Good morning, Hugh. Good to be on with you.
It's great to talk with you. Now, I know you're a member of the Senate Intelligence Committee, so Dmitry's article in the Financial Times may not have shocked you like it shocked me, but what to make of that news?
Well, Hugh, it's a reminder the Chinese Communist Party wants to replace the United States as the world's dominant economic and military superpower so they can call the shots, so they can dictate to the United States what our policies will be around the world and who we can and cannot support. And they can hold all of the United States at risk with the threat of nuclear annihilation.
How significant is a hypersonic in space?
Pretty significant, Hugh. Again, it's not shocking that the Chinese have been working on these hypersonic missiles. That's been known for a while, as is the United States. We're still more advanced than China is, but China, as they are in so many other cases, and their military buildup is closing the gap. The main difference for probably the purpose of your audience, between a hypersonic glide missile and a ballistic missile, is that hypersonic glide missiles are designed to evade ballistic missile defenses. Ballistic missiles follow a normal trajectory. You know, it's just like if you watch a crime procedural drama and they talk about the ballistics of a bullet. Same thing with a rifle. Same thing with a missile. It goes up, it comes down in a predictable pattern. That's what allows missile defense to work. Hypersonic glide vehicles are able to move at a much faster rate of speed and to take evasive or unpredictable maneuvers. So it's not surprising that China is pursuing these because they want to be able to strike and hold at risk all of the continental United States.
Now, the only response to hypersonics is either MAD, mutual assured destruction, by having our own that can do at least as much as theirs can, or an undetectable, indestructible nuclear deterrent, such as the Columbia class might present, or directed energy weapons, which I understand are at least 5 years away. Does this announcement or this scoop make it more likely that the Democrats will pause in their rush to spend at least $1.5 trillion and put some of that in the national defense, Tom Cotton?
Well, Hugh, I wish that were the case. But frankly, the Democrats have been the party of military weakness for decades now, going back to the Vietnam War and then Jimmy Carter and on through Bill Clinton, Barack Obama, and Joe Biden, like clockwork. When Democrats take power, they cut the military and they waste money on welfare programs and on their clients and their patrons. So you would think that China conducting such a rapid military buildup would have been a wake-up call to the Democratic Party for a long time. Just not the case, though, Hugh. They don't understand that strength is what matters in foreign policy, because only the strong can survive in a dangerous world. And for that matter, only the strong can protect the weak, and only the strong can afford to be merciful.
Now, am I not correct that any single Democrat or Angus King, independent from Maine, who caucuses with him, and I like Governor King, Senator King a lot, or Jack Reed, who is allegedly a hawkish kind of, could not any single Democrat insist that part of this massive fire hose of additional spending they're poised to pour out on the United States include Columbia class funding or hypersonic or directed energy weapon funding?
Yes, Hugh, in principle, you are correct, because the Democrats only have a 50-50 Senate controlled the agenda only by virtue of Vice President Harris's tie-breaking vote. But for any Democrats, even those you mentioned who are serious at times about our national security, to hold up the Democrats' massive welfare bill and Green New Deal to demand more military spending would be about as popular in the Democratic Party as holy water is to vampires.
But, you know, at some point, well, maybe not at some point. Let me play you Jen Psaki yesterday for our audience who has not yet heard. I played it a couple of times. She gets a question on the hypersonics. Cut number 17, Jen Psaki at the White House yesterday.
Can you comment on reports that China tested a nuclear-capable hypersonic missile over the summer to the surprise of U.S. officials? Are these accurate, and do these raise concerns about China's nuclear capability?
I know General Secretary Austin, I should say, was asked this question this morning and addressed it, but I'm not going to comment on the specific report. I can say and would echo what he said, which is generally speaking, we've made clear our concern about the military capabilities that the PRC continues to pursue. And we have been consistent in our approach with China. We welcome stiff competition, but do not want that competition to veer into conflict. And that is certainly what we convey privately as well.
Now, Senator Cotton, we welcome stiff competition has never exactly been the Democratic line on arms control and nuclear weaponry. But if we're going to have stiff competition, it's going to take some money. So what is it? Are we giving up or are we going to compete?
Hugh, first off, I'd like to address this common rhetorical turn of Joe Biden's administration. The president himself has said on numerous occasions that we welcome the competition or we're not afraid of vigorous competition. Hugh, this is not like some Olympic matchup of figure skaters or basketball teams where you go out and you compete in a game and then you all shake hands and hug on the medal stand afterwards. This is a struggle for mastery of the world in which life or death are the stakes. So for these Democrats to keep saying we welcome the competition is the height of folly. We don't welcome the competition. We'll see who the best team is, and maybe we'll play a best of seven series the way they're doing in Major League Baseball right now. We want to beat China. China is waging a Cold War against us. Part of that Cold War is the military buildup, not just these hypersonic glide missiles, but the new missile silos they're building in Western China, fortifying their air force and naval capabilities just across Taiwan on the Taiwan Strait. These are all of a piece with their efforts to replace the United States as a world's dominant superpower. And it's time to get rid of this idea that it's just a friendly competition in a game and face the facts that we have to win this Cold War. Otherwise, we will lose it by default.
Some Democrats are in love with the rise and fall of great powers theory, that there must be a handing of the baton off every 100 years or so between Great Britain and the United States, or now between the United States and the CCP. That is actually dire, because they are not committed to what we're committed to. They're not even in the same playing field, Senator Cotton. Am I wrong in that? I don't think I'm being hyperbolic.
Well, Hugh, a lot of these Democrats in Congress are Maoists. So maybe they are fine with the rise of the Chinese communist power. But, you know, to borrow from your Friday Hillsdale Review conversations, many Democrats are deeply influenced by German historicism and this idea that history has a capital H and it's determined by mechanistic forces. And therefore, there must be a changing of the guard, so to speak, of great powers. That is not the way the world works. It is influenced and directed by human choices here and in China and elsewhere in the world. And that decline is a choice. And if America declines and China replaces it, it won't be because there were some kind of mechanistic, deterministic forces dictating that. It'll be because leaders in the United States made the wrong choices over a number of years.
Now, Senator Cotton, you've got the three key committees, Judiciary, Armed Services, and Intel. This is being presented as a surprise that China's launched by a Long March missile of a hypersonic into space and it did a global orbit and hit within a couple dozen miles of its target. Is it a surprise to our DARPA intellectuals, do you believe? You know, we know that hypersonics, the United States has about seven different kinds under development, but I don't know that we've actually tested any in space.
Hugh, I wouldn't say that it's a shocking surprise. You know, we invest a lot of money in determining the military capabilities of our adversaries. Consistently in the Cold War with Soviet Russia, that was the intelligence that was best, was assessing military capabilities. We're much weaker at assessing the intentions of foreign leaders. If in part, they keep those intentions very closely held. Nor is it, I wouldn't say what some people call this a Sputnik moment. The thing that was shocking about this Sputnik moment is it demonstrated a capability that the United States did not then have. That's not the case, as you point out, with hypersonic glide vehicles. We are also rapidly trying to build up that capability, and we're still doing a better job of it than any country in the world. But it is, again, a reminder that China is not simply building defensive weapons to protect itself, to peacefully integrate into the world. They want to dominate the world order and replace the United States as the world superpower. We cannot allow that to happen.
There was an article by Ross Douthat in the Sunday New York Times, Senator Cotton, that James Bond's newest movie, The Fifth in the Daniel Craig turn at 007, or not 007, depending on how one reads the movie, left one with the impression that China didn't exist. There is no mention of China, not in any of the five Bond movies made by Daniel Craig, except with Shanghai as a backdrop and another fleeting backdrop shot. As opposed to the original Bond franchise was built on Russian being a menace, the Soviets being a menace. Do you think that's purposeful on Hollywood's part, just like the NBA silence on Hollywood is purposeful?
No question, Hugh. Hollywood is filled with shameful communist bootlickers who are desperate to have access to Chinese movie theaters. And therefore, you never see movies with Chinese bad guys, unlike, as you said, during the Cold War with Soviet Russia. And it's not just Hollywood, Hugh. Think about it. Except for Fox, since they spun off their movie studio, every major news channel in America is owned by or affiliated with a movie studio. ABC and Disney, NBC and Universal, CBS and Paramount, CNN and Warner. Do you think they report the news straight on China? Or do you think the word has come down from on high that you can't be too tough on China? Otherwise, we can't get our new animated movies into Chinese movie theaters.
I actually had never thought of that before, Senator. You're making me... So every major news organization in America has an interest in China accepting their product from their theaters.
Every major new TV news channel, the three major networks, ABC, CBS, NBC, MSNBC, which is their NBC's affiliate, and CNN, are all owned by or affiliated with a major movie studio. The only news channel for which that's not the case is Fox, since they spun off 21st Century or 20th Century Fox years ago. So do you seriously think the corporate executives, those companies, allow their news channels to report the news straight on the Chinese Communist Party when they're trying to get their latest James Bond movie into Chinese theaters, or trying to get their latest Disney animated movie in Chinese theaters? Give me a break.
Have you ever held a hearing? That's fascinating. I don't know that the American I don't even know if the if that's in the public interest for a news channel to have a movie relationship, something that is revenue dependent upon. I don't know that that's in the public interest. I don't know what you can do about it, but has there ever been a hearing on it?
No, we haven't had hearings about it. I mean, I've taken great efforts. I put out a big report earlier this year on what I call the China lobby, which is the vast influence peddling that China has across our country, not just in Hollywood and the media, but also in big business, all of whom want access to the Chinese market, many of whom source their products in China. University presidents and college presidents across the country that depend in no small part for revenue from full-rate Chinese-paying exchange students. The China lobby is vast and pervasive in this country, and it's something we have to understand and that we have to confront and defeat because it exerts a baleful influence on our foreign policy directed towards the Chinese Communist Party.
It's also a lobby now trying to downplay what the hypersonic breakthrough means for them. Senator Tom Cotton, always a pleasure. Thank you, Senator. Great to catch up with you on this most important of issues. We will transcribe and post that interview with Senator Cotton. Welcome back, America. Hugh Hewitt, the final segment of today's Hugh Hewitt Show. If you want to get the highly concentrated Hugh Hewitt podcast, go over to Hugh Hewitt on iTunes or Spotify. The interview with Hugh Hewitt will also be up at iTunes, Spotify, and Salem Podcast Network. Today, I conclude with Josh Kroshauer of the National Journal. Hotline, Josh, to you if you follow him on Twitter. Good morning, Josh.
Good morning, Hugh.
I have been talking all morning about the new Terry McAuliffe ad in which he says, don't believe Glenn Youngkin. He's lying about me, taking me out of context. It's a pretty old rule, Josh, that if you're talking about the other guy in the last 2 weeks of a campaign, it hadn't gone well for you.
Yeah, Hugh, you followed so many campaigns over the years that is a telltale sign of a campaign that's struggling to calibrate its message in the final few weeks of an election. It's not a good sign. I mean, if you live in Virginia, you've seen ad after ad slamming McAuliffe on education, slamming McAuliffe on this debate comment he made saying that parents should be, you know, secondary to school boards and school administrators. And he had not changed his position. He had doubled down, tripled down, underscored that in many interviews. I saw him last week, said the same thing. And now they're up with an ad trying to clarify his remarks. McAuliffe said they were taken out of context at the debate in this advertisement. But look, I mean, education is the number one issue in my reporting on the Virginia governor's race. This is something that's not just rallying the Republican base, but it's moving some moderate voters in the suburbs towards the Republican side. And I think McAuliffe now sees that. I wrote a column just about school closures. The fact that McAuliffe didn't realize school closures were an issue when he announced his campaign last year in front of a school that was closed and didn't mention anything about reopening schools or coming up with a plan last year to reopen schools. And then later on, he kind of adjusted as his own supporters, as his own voters saw that was an issue that was resonating with a lot of voters. He's been slow on the uptick in realizing these issues have resonance in Virginia, and I think it's going to be a big problem for him in the closing stretch.
Yeah, there is also behind this. In fact, let's play the clip, cut number 9. This is what Terry McAuliffe said.
I don't think parents should be telling schools what they should teach.
Now, that's just the icing on a cake of a year of closure and now incoherence in COVID policy, Josh Krasher. I don't know if you know, but even within single districts, policies vary from school to school about exposure, time off, when do you begin counting. And children are being held out of school sometimes for 3 and 4 weeks, and they haven't even been sick. They've just had an exposure to someone who's sick. And it's a repeat of last year's nightmare. And Ralph Northam's doing nothing about this.
Yeah, I mean, it's a county by county decision. And I know in Fairfax County, there's been a lot of frustration about some of these specific policies. I think there's a grab bag of issues that parents are concerned about. Some of it's about curricular decisions, age-inappropriate curriculum on gender identity. That's become a big issue in parts of the state. You have issues with getting rid of, the number one school in the country is in Virginia, one of the top magnet schools in the country. And just this past year during the pandemic, they got rid of the admissions test. They totally revamped the standards for getting into the Thomas Jefferson Science and Technology School in Fairfax. And a lot of Democratic parents, that was sort of a gateway drug to seeing some of the other challenges and problems with the state's education decision making. So there's a whole grab bag of issues. When McAuliffe had that soundbite at the debate saying that parents should be sort of subservient to the school board, it hit a nerve with not just conservative voters, but a lot of frustrated parents across the state. And he's clearly getting traction with that line of attack.
Now, Josh Krasher, I've been looking eagerly and I cannot find any analysis of the early vote. Have you seen anything that tells us where it is, who it's for, any kind of analysis of the early vote?
Yeah, so some important context. Virginia never had real early voting until last year, so there's not much of a baseline to really compare it to. There hasn't been a whole lot of early voting, compared to 2020. There has been more turnout on the Republican districts, the Republican jurisdictions. But we're talking about a very small sample, and I think it's a little foolhardy to extrapolate, especially in Virginia, the early voting numbers. But the one thing I think that's clear is that there's more engagement and intensity on the Republican side of the aisle. Republicans don't usually vote early. There are disproportionate numbers of them voting early in this election. So that's the only real sign I think we can see that there is a lot of Republican excitement, a lot of Republican engagement.
Okay, give me your thumb. You know, when you put the thumb up and you try and get the line of the green, I watch the Youngkin Twitter feed and I watch the McAuliffe Twitter feed. Youngkin's got great crowds. Now, I voted for Glenn Youngkin. People can adjust for the lie of my green. I'm a Youngkin supporter. What do you see in terms of the enthusiasm, the campaign ability of both candidates?
Yeah, I was with both campaigns this past week. I was with Youngkin yesterday. His message, his stump speech has gotten a lot better since when I first saw him a couple months ago. So he's definitely hitting his stride. He's really found on education a message that seems to be resonating with a lot of voters. You know, the thing with McAuliffe that I find fascinating is that his campaign's closing message, in addition to responding on education, is about Trump. And he's now, there's a new ad that he has up about Charlottesville. I'm not sure that, I mean, even Democratic voters, I'm not sure if Trump and what happened in the past is necessarily the top issue to get them to show up and certainly to win over the persuadable voters out there. This is a bet on Trump still being the dominant. McAuliffe is betting on Trump being the dominant force in this governor's race. And I'm not hearing that from either Democrats or Republicans. So if McAuliffe loses, that's going to be one of the biggest strategic miscalculations, that they went all in on national politics when there are a lot of local issues that are on the front center in minds of Virginia voters.
I think you are absolutely dead on right. Josh Krasher, Hotline Josh on Twitter. Retread Terry is trying to retry the Trump message not working against Glenn Youngkin. We'll keep you posted on that race when I come back tomorrow. Thank you, Josh Krasher. Thank you, Ben. Thank you, Adam. Thank you, Generalissimo. I'll talk to you back in D.C. tomorrow on the next Hugh Hewitt Show.
three-star general, Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.